All right, Crisscross Applesauce, thank you for that. Welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you, coast to coast and around the world on AFN. I'm a FAN of our military, doing a great job, and appreciate all that you do. It's Tuesdays, and in the first hour, you know, we talked to Karen Lyle from SalesportTalk.com, and we have actually this full hour, the first hour today on the show, dedicated to the topic of sailing, along with our good friend Christopher Kane, who is in studio and who is on Twitch right now. We want to talk about the America's Cup today. And Karen, let's start with you, because the things we know about the America's Cup, it's a bit of a misnomer on why it's called the America's Cup. It was 1851, and it was a British boat, a schooner called the America, which won the Around the Isle of Wight race. This is how it got the name. It wasn't because we had the longest winning streak in sports, 1857 to 1983. Isn't that right?
No, it's because the boat name was America. And so that's why it got the name America's Cup.
Actually, even
yes, anything else you'd like to throw into the long history of the America's Cup, Christopher?
Yeah, so it's actually even more fun than that. So the America beat the assembled British fleet so badly that when it came around the edge and it finished, Queen Victoria asked her aide, who is in first place, and he announced, "Your Majesty, I regret to inform you, it's the America." And she said, "Who is in second?" And none of the rest of the fleet had come around the corner yet. And so the aide said, "Your Majesty, I regret to inform you, there is no second." And that has actually become the unofficial slogan of the America's Cup, because the America's Cup final is not a fleet race where every team races together. It is the final two boats. So you're either first or you're last. There is no second.
Wow, Ricky Bobby.
That's absolutely true.
All right. So what's going on with the America's Cup this year, Karen?
Well, actually, the Defiant, which is the American Magic team, has just arrived in New Zealand, and we just had some wonderful photographs that have been posted. And Christopher, can you tell us a little bit about the photographs that you have online for us to discuss today?
Yeah.
Because we're going to talk a little bit about the retrospect before we get into the current.
Absolutely. So we're going to have some fun on this show. If you go to SalesportTalk.com, that's two T's, SalesportTalk.com, and you click on the link for today's show, you're going to see a link to an album of photos. And the reason we have put this up is, since the America's Cup is still not until next March, one of the things they are doing to get people starting to get excited, since boats are starting to arrive in New Zealand, is they're doing film and YouTube videos of the America's Cup that was in San Francisco, which is still considered one of the great America's Cups. And I was there covering it for the Huffington Post and the New York Times, and I took a bunch of behind-the-scenes photos, which had never been seen before. And if you go to SalesportTalk.com and click on the link for today's show, you'll see a link to an album. And as we go through this show, we're going to be referring back to those photos. We're going to be talking about how we got from the 45s to the big 72s. We're going to be talking about some of the equipment and how it's changed for this upcoming America's Cup. We're going to be talking about the design of the boats and a lot of cool stuff that hasn't been seen before, which I think is very timely, because right now you get to go to YouTube, to the America's Cup channel, and you get to watch the races they had in San Francisco, which were really what got a lot of people interested in the America's Cup, because usually it's held way out in the ocean, and who gets to see it? And in San Francisco, you could walk down to the shore and watch these 72-foot catamarans blasting along at 50 miles an hour. And so I think it's good timing on their part that they have brought these back to start getting people ready, because as Karen mentioned, the boats are starting to show up in New Zealand.
Well, let me ask you this, Christopher. We know that the America's Cup has been rocked by a potential scandal that maybe the Emirates team New Zealand has been spying, something that they said is both baseless and highly defamatory. What secrets are out? What secrets can come out in such a thing? What have you heard?
Well, I got to tell you, Rick, as a longtime sailor, I grew up on San Francisco Bay. I am shocked I'm shocked by this news because I can't believe it took this long for a spying scandal to come out. I mean, let's talk about it. Spying is one of the core features of the America's Cup. It is known for it. So it's about bloody time we got a spying scandal. I was getting a little disappointed, you know, in all these restrictions on COVID. I was going to go down there and start a spying scandal myself because I'm just not going to stand for it, Rick. And spying is part and parcel. Spying is part of the America's Cup. In fact, the America's Cup, as you know, does a very weird thing, which is the winner of the last America's Cup gets to write the rules for the next America's Cup, which is kind of crazy. And part of that is always legislating how we shall spy, which I think is great. And so, this is two of the things that are sort of ongoing in the Cup. One is we do love a good spying scandal in the Cup, and we kind of frankly expect it. But second of all, you have to remember the Kiwi team is partially sponsored by the New Zealand government. And this has always been a sort of a love-hate relationship. Grant Dalton, who's been the longtime head of the New Zealand team, has constantly had to navigate this very narrow ledge between the need to support this national team in one of the top national sports and people on the street going, why the heck is our government spending our tax dollars on a sailing event? So every America's Cup with the New Zealand team, there seems to be a moment where there's an issue between the New Zealand government and the New Zealand team, that this happened last time. This happened when they were in San Francisco. So this kind of comes up because it's a strange relationship. And again, it's the only team that is partially sponsored by their government. So I think you're seeing these two things come together. Spying is racing. If rubbing is racing, spying is sailing.
Christopher, I'm looking at the photograph of the Oracle boat that looks like it's coming in at a really fast pace. I see the white water and is going to hit the boat in front of it, right out by, it must have been in Alameda there by the Skywalker.
That's actually was Pier 80, which was – so we're referring down to the album. So once again, not to be repetitive, I will say head over to salesporttalk.com. Click on the link for today's show, and you'll see a link to an album with a bunch of behind-the-scenes photos, and that is what we're talking about. That wake is actually from the support boat. That is Oracle being taken out of their base from Pier 80 for race day in San Francisco. And the reason they had to have that giant boat next to it, this has changed for this America's Cup, but one of the things that made the catamarans, so we can talk about this more as we get into sort of these photos, one of the things that made these catamarans in San Francisco very hard to control is the main wing, which provided the majority of the power in the boat, was not a soft sail like you see in a normal sailboat. It was a hard wing like the wing on an airplane. And so you could partially depower it, but you could never completely depower it. In a normal sailboat, if you're starting to heel over, if there's too much power in the sails, you can just basically let the ropes go and let the sails flap and depower the boat that way. You can't depower a solid wing completely. So they would actually put the platform, the hulls, into the water first, and they would crane the wing on top of the boat every day. And the second that wing got locked into the platform became very unstable. It's like a boat pulling a dog pulling at a leash. That boat wanted to go the second you put that wing on it. So they had to have a big support boat. And the wake you see is the power of the engines from that boat as it tries to control this sailboat. Those are thousands of horsepowers of engines foaming up the water as it tries to control a sailboat because there was so much power being delivered in those hard sails.
Good stuff. We have to run to a break. And when we come back, more of Karen Lyle and Christopher Kane. If you'd like to get in, 1-800-878-PLAY. I'm Rick Tittle. Come on back on Sports Byline.
A Attention timeshare owners. This is an urgent consumer alert from the Timeshare Exit Hotline, a national company specializing in helping consumers legally get out of their expensive timeshare contracts. We're offering you a way to legally get rid of your timeshare. So if you're fed up with the maintenance fees that keep on coming and want to learn if you can terminate your timeshare legally and permanently, call today. Even if you've tried before and were unsuccessful in getting rid of your timeshare, call today and see if we can help. We offer a complete 100% unconditional client satisfaction guarantee. Make this completely free call and learn how we can help you legally put an end to your timeshare nightmare once and for all. You have nothing to lose, so call right now to qualify and receive a free consultation. 800-880-7167. 800-880-7167. That's 800-880-7167. Paid for by Airtime Media.
Most of us like to be out in the sun. That's why sunscreen and other safety measures are key to protecting your skin from aging and cancer. The FDA recommends using a sunscreen with a sun protection factor, or SPF, of 15 or higher. Also, look for broad spectrum on the label. That means both harmful ultraviolet A and B rays are blocked. UVA rays age the skin, UVB rays burn, and both cause cancer. But the perfect sunscreen doesn't count if you use it wrong. Don't need sunscreen on a cloudy day? Wrong. 80% of UV rays still get through the haze. Only use sunscreen at the beach? Nope. Anytime you're outside, UV rays attack the skin, so you need protection. And you have to reapply sunscreen every 2 hours. Remember, SPF plus broad spectrum equal healthy fun in the sun. Visit www.fda.gov/sunscreen for more information. A message from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration.
Matthew.
Huh? Oh, sorry.
It's okay. I just need you to listen to me.
I know that a lot of times, Mom, it might not seem like I'm listening to you, but I am. I hear you. And what you say really does matter to me.
I mean, let's be honest. No kid likes rules, but I get why we have them. I hear you, and I know it's because you care.
All the talks we've had over the years, including what you've told me about not using alcohol and other drugs, they stick with me. And believe it or not, they really do make a difference, especially at times that matter most.
Hey, want a drink?
No, thanks, I'm good. So thank you, Dad, for talking and preparing me for what's ahead.
Thanks, Mom, for never giving up and always being my biggest fan.
Thank you for letting me know what you expect, so I can try to meet your expectations.
Thank you for talking.
For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Welcome back to Sports Byline USA, Tuesday first hour, SalesportTalk.com. Karen Lyle, as always, co-hosting this segment with me, and our guest, Christopher Kane, who's been with us several times before. Christopher, I wanted to ask you, it was big news in Auckland, as we say, or Auckland, as they say over there in New Zealand, that the Defiant American Magic has arrived. It left in May from Pensacola, made its way wending through the Straits of Panama, and it's funny because this is huge news over there. It's they're all excited, aren't they?
Oh, they're very excited. Yeah, they wanted to get it out of Florida before hurricane season. So the first Challenger is in the waters off New Zealand, and this is going to be fun because we've seen bits and pieces of the boats. We've seen the boats practicing, but we haven't really seen them in fighting trim in terms of their sails, their handling. So now the second part of the spying is going to kick in, which is all the other teams starting to watch the competitors on the water and trying to figure out how fast do they come out of their maneuvers, how high or low are they riding on the foils, and that will give them additional information. Obviously, the foils are viewable this year, so it's not as much secrecy around that. But they're going to be looking at a lot of the hull and wing dynamics as these boats start going to work, seeing what kind of sea states they seem to work best in, because I'm not going to say that in the past America's Cup's defenders have used weather brakes to make sure their boats were in the best conditions. But yeah, actually, I'm totally saying that. So part of the dossier on the competitors is going to start getting built now. And then in September, we'll see the English and the Italian boats show up as well. That's when they're slated to show up.
One thing we haven't seen, Christopher, is these monohull foiling boats in close quarters with each other managing the turns. I'm really interested to see what happens with that. What do you think?
Yeah, that's the part where it's going to get interesting for me. And I've had this question from day one, and I think I may have said this on a previous show, that those big foils up in the air next to boats in close quarters – I'm expecting a little damage here. I'm expecting a little bumper car action at the beginning. Part of these boats is understanding not just how they accelerate for your own purposes, but to be able to calculate the closing distance between your boat and another boat. One thing us sailors are very good at is time on distance measurements. So we can look at a mark a quarter mile downfield and be able to instantly know at this boat speed it'll take me X amount of minutes to get there. And we don't know what the time on distance calculations are for these boats yet when they're in close quarters. So I expect we're going to see a collision or two with these as people start figuring out not just the speed of these boats, but the speed between these boats as well and how fast they accelerate and decelerate. There are going to be some mistakes.
And that's interesting, too. And I saw with the Luna Rossa, the Red Moon, the Prada Pirelli, how's that for advertising? A story about how when you experiment with a new class and you push the limits to the maximum, the only way you're going to know you reach your breaking point is by going over that line. So
oh, yeah.
For a sailing neophyte like myself, what does that mean when it says designing a new class and experimenting? What is new this time around, Christopher?
Okay, so this is not just a new class for the America's Cup. This is a brand new type of boat that has never been used before. And that's kind of cool because the America's Cup has always had a tradition of introducing new technologies in the sport of sailing. So fractional rigs started with the America's Cup. Separating the rudder from the keel started with the America's Cup. The winged keel that is sort of in a lot of cruising boats now started with the America's Cup. So a lot of new technology. I'm not sure this one is going to bleed down to the weekend sailor, but this boat is unlike any other boat. Even when they were running the catamarans in San Francisco, there have been catamarans. There are competitive fleets like the International 40s that have been racing high-speed catamarans for years. There was at least some body of knowledge to start with. These boats were basically – they have taken the lifting action of the two hulls of the catamaran and basically stuck two lifting surfaces onto one hull. So when it's at rest in the water, it looks like a normal monohull. But when they ride out, instead of having a surface coming out of the bottom of each catamaran, there are two surfaces that poke out either side of these boats, and depending on which direction they're going, they'll drop one down on one side and pull the other one up and vice versa. And when they're up, they're very obvious. They are big, huge, basically like someone has taken a keel, rotated it 90 degrees, and stuck it out the side of a boat. So they're very – they look like water bugs. They're very strange-looking boats. And part of when people are racing in close quarters to each other is you – what's more important than understanding speed is understanding acceleration and deceleration. That is more important for not getting into bad places. And I don't think at the end of the day anyone really knows because two of these boats in close quarters being pushed hasn't happened yet.
When looking at the video that we – I think we have posted online in that section, that little link we have of the American Magic Defiant, it's really strange to see a monohull that is just traveling level over the water because that's what it does with that – foiling action is that it doesn't heel at all. It doesn't tip to the side.
Right.
But then when you go around a corner, they are using one of the foils, one of the foils usually comes out of the water for the curve and so forth. So
during the turns, they actually, at a certain point in the turns, have both foils in the water on both sides of the boat. So they will have one up and drop one down, and they'll foil along. And then as they're turning, they will bring both of those foils, put them in the water, do the turn, and then pop up the other one. And the reason for that is if you come off the foil, that boat will come to a complete stop. There will be no forward acceleration. There's too much wetted surface, and they will stop dead in the water. And that's one of the things, if you go back after this broadcast and you're watching the old America's Cup broadcast from San Francisco, you'll notice from the beginning, from the first race to the last race, how much better the boats got on staying on the foils during their turns. At the beginning, they would come off the foils, they would turn, drop down, speed up, get back up on the foils as they got to speed. And at the end of the America's Cup, these boats were just perfectly turning back and forth, never coming off the foils, never slowing down. We're going to see that level of precision on day one. And, you know, there's already practice video out there showing these boats executing their turns and never coming off the foils, which is quite a bit of choreography to pull off.
Christopher, I remember in the Olympics over the years when it comes to swimmers, they talked about there was this new swimsuit that had some sort of material that was so, you know, non-viscous in water, and it was almost like fish scale-like, and it was banned for a while, and yep. They had to study it. When it comes to boats, is there a certain metallic coating or paint or anything that actually makes it go faster in water, or is that irrelevant?
No, that, you know, people have played with laminar flow in the past, and it's great for straight lines if a boat's not going to be changing its direction, but in close quarters races in America's Cup where boats are doing 30, 40 turns a race, it's not as big of an advantage. In the America's Cup, you make your distance on the straightaways and you lose your distance in the turns. So America's Cups are really won or lost in the turns.
One of the things, Perry Hutchinson, the captain of the American Magic Team, as you know, had mentioned to me, was that for the cavitation to be less of a factor in speed, that they really had to make sure that the foils didn't have any nicks on them, that they were extremely clean. And I know that racers always clean the bottoms of their boats every time they go out. But I wonder what the foiling cleaning is like, if that's a diver operation or they're examining that with a microscope. For me, that's just one of those things that I would be interested to know how they handle getting that happening.
Yeah, the foils are going to be far more important than the hull. Although there are, I am surprised to see, and I guess I shouldn't be surprised since this is a brand new type of boat, but there really are some differences in the hull form, and especially towards the nose, how people are dealing with it. And it's funny because at the end of the day, it's becoming more like an airplane in that the hull of the boat is becoming less a positive aerodynamic force and more a negative. So you care more now about reducing drag and having a more aerodynamic shape than you care about how cleanly it moves through the water, because in a good race, it's almost never going to be in the water.
Just have about a minute before the break, Christopher. And we saw with SailGP, you know, at times these boats became airborne. And to that effect, I mean, what do you do to make sure that you don't, you know, leave the water? And is that against the rules?
It's not against the rules. And you're going to see some overlift. You're going to see some lift dumps happening. Absolutely. With these racers. And you've seen a bunch of them go over already. You haven't really seen a full pitch pull yet. There's so much lifting surface forward of where I suspect the center of effort and the center of gravity is in these boats that I'm not sure they're going to pitch pull, but they definitely like to roll over.
Rick Tittle and Karen Lyle, SailSportTalk.com, as we pick the America's Cup brain of Christopher Kane, who is in our studios. If you'd like to ask a question about sailing, this is the time to do it, and the number is 1-800-878-PLAY. Once again, 1-800-878-7529. Email address, rick@sportsbyline.com. You can go to salesporttalk.com as well. And if you'd like to call me on my home phone number, it's 510-5-20. We will take a quick break, and we still have more to talk about with Karen Lyle and Christopher Kane, America's Cup, or as they say in England, America's Cup. Come on back on Sports Byline USA.
Mom and Dad are such a loving pair, but the house where they jump when the tempest prayer. They promise to look till death do them part. I wonder if my parents will ever be apart. My mommy's job is a knife. I thrill to see her and that is life. And daddy swings a gun.
This is Karen Lyle of Sailsport Talk. In Bristol, Rhode Island, U.S. Sailing announced that the men's 470 athletes, Stu McNay of Providence, Rhode Island, and David Hughes of Miami, Florida, have officially earned selection to the Tokyo 2020 U.S. Olympic Sailing Team and are nominated to Team USA. Congratulations, Stu and David. Caleb Payne, formerly on the U.S. Sailing Olympic Team, looks to his new role as a member of the New York Yacht Club American Magic Team. Caleb is on his way to Auckland with a plan to work hard, learn from an amazing group of sailors, and try to contribute in any way he can to bringing America's Cup home. While the U.S. Sailing Team will miss Payne on the water, all of the athletes, coaches, and staff, and we here at Sailsport Talk wish him well in his next chapter. In Auckland, New Zealand, Defiant, the first AC-75 racing yacht built for New York Yacht Club's American Magic Team, has arrived in New Zealand. The AC-75 departed from the team's winter base in Pensacola, Florida, on May 28th and was shipped through the Gulf of Mexico, transited the Panama Canal, and then crossed the Pacific to now arrive in Auckland. Terry Hutchinson sent his greetings to us.
Hey, Karen and Sailsport Talk. This is Terry Hutchinson with the New York Yacht Club American Magic. Appreciate all the support that you're giving to us in our pursuit for the 36th America's Cup and returning the cup to the rightful spot in New York City.
Thank you, Terry. We are following your team's progress and wishing you the best. The 36th America's Cup is going to be amazing with new designs and fantastic teams competing. This Sailsport Talk report is brought to you by PianoFinders.com. Rebuilding quality grand pianos and providing piano insurance appraisals for celebrity and vintage pianos. This is Karen Lyle with a shout out to the In Shape Health Clubs in Stockton, California, on Hammer Lane, March Lane, Quail Lakes, and West Lane, all of which have reopened. In Shape Health Clubs are a member of the iTex trading community where your iTex dollars are welcome. And In Shape Health Clubs benefit the American Cancer Society and St. Jude Children's Hospital. This is Sailsport Talk, recognizing local businesses around the world that make each city unique. There are different facets to fitness, and all of them are important to a healthier, happier life. In building stronger biceps, you're also building greater confidence. We know that in gaining stamina on a cardio bike or treadmill, you're also gaining energy and enthusiasm. Fitness not only improves the way you look, it improves your outlook and how you feel about yourself. InShape clubs have the equipment, classes, programs, people, and perspective to put you on a path to a better place. Check out InShape.com and visit one of their 60 locations in California today.
Back with another segment of SailSportTalk.com on a Tuesday. We still have another 2 hours to go. General Sports Talk with Lieutenant Colonel Rick Tittle on the other side. But we have, of course, my co-host for these segments, Karen Lyle. And in studio, our guest, Christopher Kane, aficionado on the America's Cup. Christopher, I don't know if you can add to this or not, but I did see an article about the town of Marblehead, Mass., which has produced a steady stream of America's Cup talent for over a century. Sailors like Charles Francis Adams, Ted Hood, Judd Smith, and this time on board Defiant will be Trevor Byrd, that he will be the grinder and athletic force needed on the hydraulic pressure to trim the sails and the foils as well. Is there, you know, I always say Western PA is the cradle of coaches, and is there something about in the water in Marblehead, or is that just part of the sort of natural disposition of the people there?
I what else are you going to do in Marblehead? And we just lost all our East Coast sponsors. So, no, Marblehead, you know, being part of New England, which has got a great sailing tradition, you know, has been there from the beginning. And you look at the fact that the America's Cup used to hang out at Newport, Rhode Island. All the harbors close by were populated with kids grown up in skiffs and dories watching these gigantic J-class boats sail. And I think that created a tradition of, you know, not just wanting to sail, but really having the America's Cup be a North Star, because for most of its 10-billion-year reign, the America's Cup was held in Newport, Rhode Island until 87. So, I mean, they're 83, actually. So, you know, there's a lot of those, you know, harbor towns around Newport, Rhode Island, and the states around it grew up as part of this greater America's Cup community for hundreds of years.
Christopher, the grinder is really the muscle in the boat and the power. In the boats that you have pictures of on the web for the 2013, I can't remember. I never got to see those grinders up close like you did, because you actually went on a ride on that, and those pictures you took are when you were on those boats. Terry Hutchinson said something about the Defiant having the grinders so well recessed down in the hull that they're not feeling the wind as it comes by. What was it like feeling the wind when you were on the America's Cup? I guess it was Oracle.
Yeah, the Oracle boat. It was pretty amazing. For those of us who are joining us late, we are talking about a behind-the-scenes photo album we have at sailsporttalk.com. Two T's, sailsporttalk.com. If you click on the link for today's show, you will see a link to an album. And it's a bunch of photos that I took, back scenes with Artemis, with Oracle. And yeah, the grinders, this is really where it started with the America's Cup in San Francisco. So the grinders, basically, the sails are so powerful, and it's so hard to drive those foils into the water now that they're actual lifting surfaces, that you can't human power those. You need to basically build up pressure in hydraulic systems and then use that power to move the sails and drop and retract the foils. So what you get is these guys on the boats called the grinders, and they're called it because they kind of, the old America's Cup, they look like coffee grinders. And they have handles, and you sit there and you get a bunch of really strong guys, crew do really well for this, ex-crew guys, and they basically grind on those handles to build up pressure in the hydraulic cylinders, so then the sail trimmers can control the sails and manage the foils. As I mentioned, with these new boats that are going to spend almost no time with the hull in the water, the hull, the sailors, everything on what we would consider the boat, those now become things that really your primary concern is reducing aerodynamic, you know, creating a pure aerodynamic shape for that surface. So a bunch of sailors standing up, blocking the wind on the grinders is not great. So you want them down low, almost like they're on a bicycle and grinding this way. And that way you keep them low in the water. It also means that the skipper and the tactician have a better view of what's happening in front of them. But it's really about lowering the aerodynamic impact in those boats now. But you still need the majority of the crew on these boats now don't actually sail the boats. What they're there for is to provide the power to actually be able to sail the boats. And they're really quite complicated systems now.
You know, it's funny. I was looking at the merch online for AC-36, and I talked about Luna Rossa Prada Pirelli. They sell for the Luna Rossa a polo shirt with the Pirelli logo on it and Luna Rossa. You can get it in 5 different colors. And each one costs 120 euros. Is that the kind of thing where sailing is still an elitist sport, or is this more of a Prada thing? What is it about that, you think, Christopher?
Well, okay, so I'm going to get on a soapbox here for a second. There's always been this issue with sailing being an elitist sport, because it's a sport that's, you know, it's Larry Ellison, it's Prada, it's all of these billionaires, because Lord knows, in no other sport do rich people own the sports team. Well, except for Green Bay Packers. They get a buy on this. But this, I don't know why in sailing there's this connection. We don't talk about it being Jed York's 49ers. We talk about the players. And yet in the America's Cup, we seem to be obsessed about who the owners are and less about the sailors. And the reality is an entire America's Cup team gets paid less than an average NFL player. So I'm not sure why there's this elitist, and I'm sure if you go onto the 49ers site, you will find no triple-digit merch for sale at all.
I think to interrupt, I think what it is just that, you know, we've all played baseball, football, basketball. I've never been on a yacht in my life. So I think that's kind of – you kind of see the separation.
Actually, I've never been on a yacht either, but I've been on a lot of sailing boats.
Well, I just I say that because – very good. I'm getting into semantics now. Is it not the New York
getting
Yacht
you there, Rick.
Club? Is it the New York Yacht Club that
it
is putting
is New York
American
yacht
magic
club.
Out?
You know, I'd never join a club that
would
have me as a
member. I don't know that word yacht or boat.
It's Groucho.
You know, there's a lot of debate about.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up as a sailing rat at the St. Francis Yacht Club, which I, by the way, am not a member of and never have been. But I've sailed a ton of boats out of the St. Francis because, regardless of who are and where you're from, if you show up on race day on the docks with your foulies, you could probably catch a ride on a boat. And that's how I started my sailing career was being what we derisively call sail meat, rail meat. My job was to sit on the boat and provide weight to counteract the power of the sails. And the first racing boat I ever sailed on, that was my glorious job, to sit on the boat and provide weight. The majority of these sailors, if you look at their backgrounds, they do not come from rich families. They do not come from lineage. You have people who came up, who made their way because of sports and scholarships and being able to be athletes in other sports like crew and go to the Olympics. These are the people who are sailors. And so I do tend to have this autoimmune reaction when people talk about the high-end sport of sailing, because the reality is that's not 99% of the people who sail.
How is it, though – sorry to interrupt here for a second, Karen. How is it, though, that these yacht clubs – like I look at Lunarossa. I love the name, the Circolo della Vela Sicilia and the New York Yacht Club. How? Let's say you're an American and you have a boat. You're Larry Ellison. You're Ted Turner, whatever. You get Dennis Conner out there. How do you qualify to be the boat to represent the United States?
Well, there's two different answers. There's the challenger and the defender answer. So imagine – the football season, and Kansas City has just beaten the 49ers in the Super Bowl. And the next season, it starts with Kansas City already in the Super Bowl, and everyone else has to fight it out to figure out who gets to play them. And that's the America's Cup. New Zealand won the last America's Cup, so they are the defender. They're already in the America's Cup, and everyone else has to fight it out to be the challenger. So the answer is – you know, obviously on the challenger side, there were multiple San Francisco American teams out of the gate for this America's Cup. But one of the reasons you see things like the Royal Thames Yacht Club and the New York Yacht Club is part of the America's Cup deed of gift, the contract that basically rules the America's Cup, requires you to be sponsored by a yacht club. And in fact, allegedly, a yacht club that is on a arm of the sea, and this became interesting in 87 – when a bunch of American syndicates were challenging in Australia, in Fremantle, and Chicago mounted a challenge. And they were sued because Chicago was not on an arm of the sea. And they proved that if you look at the Great Lakes and connect to a bunch of canals and make your way up through enough rivers, you get yourself to a sea, so it is an arm of the sea. And they were able to challenge. But you do actually have to be sponsored by a yacht club to be a challenger, and that's why – you do see the New York Yacht Club. Now, what does the New York Yacht Club actually do in running the syndicate? Not as much as you would think. People like Terry Hutchinson, who are on the ground running that syndicate, are far more in charge of what's happening on a day-to-day basis. But that's the deed of gift, this ancient, old, decrepit legal document that governs everything that happens in the America's Cup.
One of the things that I appreciate about yacht clubs, having been a past Commodore of a yachting association, is that there's history that gets passed on from leadership to leadership. And so that does give it some continuity for us to have a race that's lasted so long. Those yacht clubs, well, you know, I mean, the personalities face it when you know, if you've done a lot of Commodores, Christopher, right? And the personalities are such that not always does the succeeding Commodore want to continue what the former Commodore did. But there is a weight of responsibility that comes with carrying on tradition that helps things move forward. And so as much as we think it's antiquated, it actually does help us to have something beyond the personalities that are involved. Vic, I'm wondering about you over there in Richmond, because I'm calling from El Cerrito, and Christopher is in San Francisco. How do you feel with Christopher sitting in your seat right now?
I think it's great. I hope you got the cobwebs out of the way. Does everything look okay there, Christopher?
I did. I don't know what to do with all these bottles, though. Well, recycle them, throw them.
We do have people who, let's just say, are squatters, so I can't be held responsible for what you have found there.
I feel a little bit like Steve Colbert. I was hoping Jon Stewart was under the table, but sadly he is not.
No, well, Rick's gonna pop up on Twitter any moment now.
Christopher Kane, anything before we say goodbye? Any place we should go to find out more or follow you, such thing?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Citizen Kane, C-A-E-N, Citizen Kane. And once again, go to salesporttalk.com, and you can follow along with what's happening in the world of racing.
And I think I told you this when I first met you, but if I didn't, when you know, we grew up, you know, reading your dad's column, and when your dad actually printed something that my mom wrote, and then your dad typed out a thank you note,
yep,
and mailed it to my mom, that was a huge, huge thrill for our family in 1977 or whatever it was.
Yeah, he was very careful to make sure that he responded to everybody. I think was part of his connection to the community.
Great stuff. Thanks a lot, Christopher. We appreciate it. And Karen, as always, thank you.
Thanks, Rick.
It's such a pleasure.
All right. Good stuff. We'll take a quick break, and we will come on back with Sports Byline.